नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी ब्राह्मणे नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। So thank you all very much for joining today's session. We have been discussing from the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, especially the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Sararta Varshini. But in that we have been discussing the section about Buddhi Yoga, which can refer to both Bhakti Yoga for some verses and Nishkama Karma Yoga for other verses. In that, we are first discussing the Bhakti Yoga section. In that, we were in the 45th verse where Krishna says, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nityasatvasto Niryoga Kshema Matmavan. Where he says, O Arjuna, the Vedas mostly speak about the subject matter which is within the three modes. So you rise up beyond the three modes. So very elaborately in this purport, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna here refers to actually Mamekam Sharanam Vraja or practice Bhakti Yoga, because only Bhakti Yoga is beyond the three modes. Now, at this point of time, few weeks back, Vahini Mataji raised this question. How can you say that devotees are beyond three modes? Because we do see devotees acting very well within the three modes. In fact, I mean, that's a part of her research also. I mean, that's why it's an area of interest for her, where her research is on trying to understand, trying to evaluate the combination of modes in a particular person. How is there a way of evaluating it through their speech? That is her this thing. So therefore, it is very much seen that even devotees are within three modes. So how can you say that devotees are beyond three modes? So from then, we started discussing, I think for the last 3 weeks, we have been discussing an answer for this question. We have been trying to understand what is our practice of bhakti and how is it beyond three modes really? If yes, how it is? If not, why it is not? We started discussing on this point. So I had long time back, prepared this seminar, which I shared in some of my sessions, is what exactly are we practicing? So I will do a quick recap of what we have seen till now. We started with the definition of Uttama Bhakti, which Rupa Goswami has given. Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyana Vritam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilam Bhakti Uttama. That how Uttama Bhakti means Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam. Favorable service or favorable emotions directed towards Krishna for with a pleasing attitude. And that has to be Anya Bilashita Shunyam. One should have no other desire other than the desire to please Krishna. And Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. The practice should not be covered with Jnana Karma Yoga, etc. So we had this exercise of how many of you think you follow this level of practice. Most devotees did not raise their hands. The main problem being Anya Bilashita Shunyam. Prabhu, we do have other desires. So therefore, we don't think we are practicing pure devotional service or Uttama Bhakti because our we do have other desires other than the desire to please Krishna. Then the question arises, okay, if you're not practicing pure devotional service, then are you practicing mixed devotional service? We did an exercise of this. So then you have to ask, how do you define mixed devotional service? What is mixed devotional service? Then we saw Srila Kapila Dev's, in Kapila Dev's teachings in the third canto, 29th chapter, he speaks about the definition of mixed devotional service. Pure devotional service is just mixed with sattvagun, rajogun and tamogun. So there he talks about how when an angry person who worships Krishna with intentions of violence, pride, hatred, he is tamasic bhakti, he is practicing tamasic bhakti. And he who worships Krishna with desire for material gain, fame, wealth, he is practicing rajasic bhakti. And sattvic bhakti is practiced by one who worships Krishna as a matter of duty with a desire for escaping material suffering. So when devotees were then asked, so what do you think about this? Do you fall within this category? Most devotees raised their hands telling that, yeah, it looks like sometimes it's sattvic, sometimes rajasic, sometimes tamasic. So our practice is sometimes, you know, influenced by sattvagun, sometimes by rajogun, sometimes by tamogun. So it very much looks like we are practicing mixed devotional service. Many devotees shared this thought. Then I shared this classic definition of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti from Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna says that the symptoms of a Vaidhi Sadhaka are that he has awakened faith in the process of devotional service, and he very much understands that apart from material activities, apart from Navada Bhakti, no other activity, karma, jnana, yoga is needed to achieve success in bhakti. He understands that. Veda Dukkatmakam Kaman, he also understands that every endeavor for sense gratification eventually leads to misery of some sort. But at the same time, he is not always able to say no to sense gratification. Sometimes or more often, he succumbs to sense gratification. And whenever he succumbs to sense gratification, he feels repentant. So these are the five symptoms, five classic symptoms of Vaidhi Sadhaka. Then we again took an opinion poll. What do you think? We have seen three sets of definitions. First was the definition of Uttama Bhakti. Second was the definition of mixed devotional service, of which we saw three types, three subtypes. And now we are seeing the definition of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. I said, of the three, which definition fits you the most? Practically everyone raised their hands for the third, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So then we saw that how Srila Rupa Goswami explains Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that bhakti in Vaidhi Sadhana is actually Uttama Bhakti only. Even a Vaidhi Sadhaka, even though he is not always able to say no to sense gratification, he is also practicing Uttama Bhakti. This is how Srila Rupa Goswami says. So then we thought, hey, how do we understand? How can someone practice Uttama Bhakti when still not being able to give up sense gratification? Which means he is attached to sense gratification. Which means he must not be Anya Bilashita Shunyam. So how can you say that he is practicing pure devotional service? So we saw that desires are of two types. Desires which are born out of our value system and desires which are born out of our conditioning. The value system functions on the parameters of what is right and what is wrong according to scriptures. Whereas the conditioning impels one to act on the platform of likes and dislikes. The value system is called as Shraddha, whereas the conditioning is called as Swabhava. And there is a constant tug of war between the two, which means sometimes we We like doing things which are prohibited in the scriptures, and sometimes we hate doing things which are highly recommended in the scriptures. So we saw that desires which are born out of the value system, they are called as abhilasha, and desires which are born out of one's conditioning, they are called as anartha. And we saw some examples, you know, desire to please one spiritual master, desire to chant quality rounds. These are like desires which are born out of our the pure devotional value system that we have acquired. Whereas desires for opposite sex, a desire to execute our anger and things like that, they are desires born out of our conditioning. We saw this, right? So therefore, we did this exercise of, separating the desires within our heart, separating them into two bins. The abhilasha bin, put your abhilashas, and what you identify as anarthas, put it in the anartha bin. We did this segregation. And then after you submitted the anartha bins to me, and you were holding on to your abhilasha bin, then we again asked the question, is your practice of bhakti now anyabhilashita shunyam? And everyone said yes. So why did we initially thought that no, I am not anyabhilashita shunyam? Because we mixed, or we thought that these two types of desires, the desires which are born out of our conditioning and the desires are born out of our value system, we put them in the same category, whereas they are not. Right? So, therefore, we saw the difference between mixed devotional service and Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Performing devotional service with material desires is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. You know, one may be embarrassed by material desires. One may succumb to material desires. That is, which may be present in the form of anarthas. That is called as Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, especially during the Anartha Nivritti stage. Okay. Whereas mixed devotional service is performing devotional service for fulfilling material desires. You actually worship the Supreme Lord while actively praying for those material desires to be fulfilled. Whereas a Vaidhi Sadhaka is embarrassed and he may pray for the material desires to be removed from his heart. This is the difference between Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and mixed devotional service. They may look quite similar from a distance, but they are not, right? So then we saw, okay, you are mentioning about this desires born out of conditioning and desires born out of value system. It sounds like a very good theory, but is there some shastric proof for this? So we saw some shastric references where Krishna says, Sadrisham cheshtate swasya prakrite jnanavanapi prakritim yanti bhutani nigrahakim karishyati. Krishna says, everyone acts according to their swabhava, according to their desires. All men act according to their desires. What can instruction or threat of punishment accomplish? But then the very next verse he says, Indriyasya indriyasyarte ragadvesho vyavastitau tayor na vasham agachet taukhyasya paripantino. He says that likes and dislikes are there in all sense objects, but one should not act on that platform. Because they are obstacles to progressing on the path of on a spiritual path. Right? This is what Krishna says. Which means he says, yes, the impetus to act according to one's swabhava is very strong, but you should overcome it, but you should learn to subdue your swabhava by the strength of your shraddha. That is what he's indicating here. Learn to subdue your swabhava by the strength of your shraddha. And then we saw this, this classic difference between how vasanas or samskaras are impressions or means by which experiences of previous life stay with the jiva life after life. And under certain conditions, the impressions activate creating memory of previous likes or dislikes. We saw the example of rasgulla. We have had a previous experience of eating and relishing that rasgulla, that as soon as we have a vision of that rasgulla, immediately it instigates our past memories of enjoyment, and immediately a desire appears to taste it, and then the jiva acts. So he says, even though vasanas or impressions are powerful to instigate the jiva to action, they do not make the jiva powerless to make his choice. Which means the choice of the jiva is quite different from the impetus that the jiva receives from the three modes. Vasanas, in the form of the vasanas. So the free will of the jiva exists along with his experience of vasanas. Which means free will is one stimulus and vasanas are the second stimulus. Okay. Vasanas stimulate in the form of likes and dislikes. And free will stimulates in the form of what is right and what is wrong. So executing one's free will means acting under the platform of what is right and what is wrong. That is free will. Just acting on the platform of likes and dislikes is not executing one's free will. That is just helplessly acting under the influence of the three modes. When one is acting helplessly under the influence of the three modes, you don't call it free will, okay, or willpower. You don't call it, right? Even in the material world, you don't call it willpower. Like if, let's say, Shyamohan Prabhu he was preparing for his MBBS entrance exam, right? So, or after his 10th standard, he expresses to his father that I wish to join a medical college and pursue my medical degree. So why don't you, get me into a neat tuition center? So father says, look, I will have to pay 50,000 rupees per annum. So if you are really going to study, I will pay that money. So he says, do you have the willpower to study 10 to 12 hours a day? His father asks like this. Or if his father asks, do you have the willpower to watch television throughout the day? I mean, both are grammatically correct sentences, right? Both are grammatically correct sentences. But which seems like a proper usage? Can someone share your thoughts? Father says, do you have the willpower to study 10 to 12 hours every day? Or he says, do you have the willpower to play cricket throughout the day, browse internet throughout the day, or watch TV throughout the day? What seems like a correct usage, even though both are grammatically correct sentences? And why? Can someone share your thoughts? Anyone? You can please raise your hands. I will unmute you. Yes, Vahini Mathis.
Prabhuji, the first one, definitely, the willpower to study.
Why? Why is the second usage? Why does it sound not correct?
Because that doesn't take any willpower. It is you know, it's like as if, you know, the kids would do it without, you know, when they are not supervised, when they're not disciplined, they will anyways will, you know, go towards watching TV or playing games. So that doesn't require any willpower. Yeah.
It doesn't. Then by what power are they engaging in those activities?
I think just to do time pass, as we say, like, you know, they're not thinking much for doing that. They're just drawn to it just to kill boredom and...
Correct. But what is... Where do they get that stimulus? Where do they get that stimulus to engage in those activities? Because both burn calories, both need energy. In fact, to play cricket throughout the day probably needs more energy than to sit at one place throughout the day. So, where do they get that? Where is that stimulus coming from for those activities? If it is not willpower, by what power are they getting stimulated to engage in these activities?
Maybe something to do with their aptitude, like, you know, their interest lies there. You know, they are interested in that. Whereas okay. Study is like, you know, going a little uphill.
Why they are interested in that?
For fun? I don't know. Okay. Because cricket...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why do they feel that it is... Why do they think that there is fun involved in that?
Maybe because it's not structured. It's not like if they are told to fight a competition or, you know, go and play state level and national level, they may feel burdened again. But if they are told to just do, you know, just play on their own and without any restrictions, they generally, you know, it seems like fun for them.
That's what? Okay. My question was, why do they think it would be more fun? Because they indulged in those activities and they found it was quite fun. You know, it was wonderful. So it was because of their past experience of indulging in those activities, mm-hmm. which they liked it, and therefore they naturally get drawn. So basically they want to play because they like it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Whereas when they want to study, not because they like it, but because it's the right thing to do. Someone has defined it that way for them, right? So, so I'm sure all of us growing up would have gone through this situation where we sometimes indulged in activities which we liked, even though it was not in our best of interest, according to whatever we identified as our best interest. And sometimes we could actually suppress that desire to act according to our liking. We suppress that desire to act according to our liking, and we acted in a way that would best serve our interests, right? Just hold on for a second. So that's what. So the fact is that for willpower is used when you, the word willpower or free will is used when you act based on an understanding of a value system. This is right. When you act because, when you do a thing because it is right, you are exercising your willpower. when you do something, when you refrain from doing something because it is wrong, you are exercising your willpower. When you do something because you like it, this is not willpower. This is the mode power. And when you refrain from doing something because you don't like it, that is not willpower. That is mode power. So, acting according to one's act. So, when one acts according to the desires which are born out of conditioning, that action is totally accomplished by the modes. That is what Bhagavad Gita says, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha. Ahankara Vimudatma Karta Ahamiti Manyate. How is he the Karta? It is the modes which are creating those desires. He is not acting according to his free will. That is not the will of the jiva, because the jiva cannot enjoy matter. So when the jiva is acting according to his likes and dislikes, they are not his likes and dislikes. Those are actually superimposed by the modes in the form of impressions, vasana. So those vasana janit iccha is what is called as anartha. But that shraddha janit iccha is called as abhilasha. So therefore Rupa Goswami says, bhakti has to be anya abhilashita shunyam. It need not be anya anartha shunyam. If Shuddha Bhakti has to be Anya Anartha Shunyam, then is Anartha Nivritti a prerequisite of Bhakti, or is Anartha Nivritti a byproduct of Bhakti? It is a byproduct of Bhakti, right? That's what we have Chetodarpana Marjanam, Pavamaha Davagni Nirvapanam, Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So Chetodarpana Marjanam is what? It cleanses the heart of all material desires in the form of anarthas. If bhakti is not accomplishing it, then what is accomplishing it? Right? So therefore, we need to learn to distinguish between these two. That's what we have been discussing. Right? So, and then we also saw some more proofs where Arjuna says, Ata kena prayuktoyam papam charati purushah anichchanna pivarshneya baladiva niyojitah. So he says that what is it, Arjuna, which is pushing me, or which is pushing a person to engage in a sin activity even though he has no iccha? No, he's telling, if you don't have iccha, don't act. I mean, why are you acting? Who's forcing you? Arjuna says, but someone is forcing. I am pushed. Even though I am unwilling to engage in that act, I am being pushed. Now the point is, where is that anicca coming from? And on what basis he has no iccha? This anicca is coming because he knows, based on the scripture, that this is a wrong activity. He knows this is papam. Then who is pushing? It is the vasanas which are pushing. Vasanas which impel kama. That's why Krishna says, kama yesha krodha yesha rajoguna samudbhavan mahashano mahapapama vidyenam iha vairina. So therefore, we were discussing this very important principle here. For a Vaidhi Sadhaka, with two of these stimuli acting, okay, the stimulus of faith and the stimulus of conditioning. With two things act, with two particular forces acting, some mostly opposing, with two opposing forces acting, we saw the, you can say, the problem, or how I am trying to think of an appropriate word, how it is very inappropriate. I know inappropriate is not the appropriate word, but still, till I remember a better word, I would use the word inappropriate. How inappropriate it is to judge a person's intentions based on his action, right? Because a person's action is a byproduct of two stimuli. The stimulus of faith and the stimulus of conditioning. So, but generally when we look at a person's action, we take that action to indicate his faith. We take that action to indicate the direction and magnitude of his faith. But this can be highly misleading. Yeah, misleading is the word that I wanted to use. Misleading, because someone may have 50 units of faith in the right direction, but he may have 100 units of conditioning in the wrong direction. So his final action will be, will have a magnitude of 50 units in the direction of his conditioning. But what we will do, we will see, dekho, ekdam cheating kahin ka, you know, he is such a cheater. He is not even a devotee. Dekho, what kind of action he is engaged in. So this is actually misleading, because the final action of an individual is a byproduct of two different stimuli. So how are you going to, now my question to you is, I wish someone tries to answer this. If I give you the magnitude and direction of the resultant vector, like in this case, action vector. If I give you the magnitude and direction of the resultant vector, can you tell me the magnitude and direction of the parent vectors? Is it possible? If there are two vectors which combine together to give a resultant vector which has a magnitude and direction. For those of you who know very simple vector mathematics, is it possible for you, for anyone to tell me what are the magnitude and directions of the parent vectors? Is it possible? Can someone answer my question? Is it possible? Okay, I see some answers. Okay, someone says yes, it is possible. Someone says no. Now, forget about even direction. I will tell you, I will give you a very simple example for it. The one who has answered yes, I will give you an example. You tell me, okay. A minus B equals 50. Tell me what is A, what is B. One who has answered yes, I want you to answer. A minus B equals 50. Tell me what is A and what is B. Can you tell? Can you tell? R pad. You have answered yes. It is possible to tell the magnitude and direction of the parent vectors. Possible. Can you tell? A minus B equals 50. What is A over what is B? Can you answer? Is it possible? Which means I understand that it is not possible actually, because Shyamohan Prabhu says A equals B plus B. That's okay. He says in vector you can do by taking projection if you know the direction, but I'm telling you that you don't know the direction. See, I mean, you know the direction only of the resultant vector. So I give you the direction and magnitude only of the resultant vector, but you don't know anything. It is not possible. So the point is, when you know the resultant action of that particular person, maybe it may be an act performed by a person with reasonably strong faith but very strong conditioning also. Or it may be a case of very weak faith also. Or it may be a case of opposite faith also. So how do you know? Unless you get to know the person very clearly, unless you earn the trust of that person and he reveals his heart, action indicates his faith, his conviction. Yeah, you should know at least the direction and magnitude of at least A or B to know, of course, yes. Right, so that's why we have to be very careful. It's very misleading. The action of a devotee need not necessarily indicate his conviction, because people don't always act on the basis of their conviction. Conditioning also plays a major role, right? So we saw further examples from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Teshtam Satatayuktanam Padatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Enamam Upayandite. He says, I give the intelligence to those who are Satatayuktanam, who constantly desire to be with me, Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, and who worship me with great love. Okay. So they worship Krishna with great love, and they constantly desire to be with Krishna. And Krishna says, Tesham evanukampartam aham agyanajam tamah nashayami atma bhavasto jnana deepena bhaswata. He says, to show favor to them, Tesham eva anukampartam aham I nashayami extinguish agyanajam tamah, the darkness born out of ignorance within their heart. Now, just now Krishna said that they are satata yuktanam, they constantly desire to be with Krishna, and bhajatam priti purvakam, they are worshipping Krishna with great love. Then where is this agyanajam tamaha, the darkness born out of ignorance, coming from? We saw Baldev Devotion says in this one statement, for those who cannot maintain their lives without me, for my unalloyed devotees alone, I reveal in the Atma my dazzling form and qualities, and destroy darkness in the form of desires for objects other than myself, born from ignorance in the form of beginningless karma, which covers knowledge by the glowing lamp of knowledge. So now he says, on one hand, he says they are unalloyed devotees, they cannot maintain their lives without me. On the other hand, he says, in their hearts exist darkness in the form of desires for objects other than myself. If they are unalloyed devotees, then where can they have, how is it that in their heart there are desires for objects other than Krishna? So either only one can be true, right? Either call them unalloyed In that case, they cannot have any desires for objects other than Krishna. Or they are not unalloyed devotees. But Krishna says that in my from my unalloyed devotee's heart, I destroyed desires for objects other than Krishna. Now you are scratching your head. How can an unalloyed devotee have other desires? So this is what Krishna here is talking about. The unalloyed nature is the unalloyed nature of his faith. But the desire for other objects is existing in the form of anarthas, conditioning. Okay. So this beginningless karma is actually called as vasana. So this is where we ended our discussion last week. Okay. This is where we ended our discussion last week. Any quick comments, discussion points, questions till now? We are going to continue this discussion further. Because this is a very, as I mentioned last week, this is a very foundational theme. It's absolutely essential to understand this foundation. The whole understanding of bhakti is based on this foundational understanding. If we get it wrong, we will end up judging people and we will end up being very harsh on ourselves. And practice of bhakti will become very difficult actually. That's why it's very important. We are discussing this in detail. And I thank Vahini Mataji for asking this relevant question. Okay, at this point, I will pause for a few seconds. Can you please, if there are any quick discussion points or questions, you can please raise your hands or type in the chat box, whatever you feel comfortable. Yes, Vahini Mataji.
So, Prabhuji, yes, this is so amazing. I mean, this is like as if, you know, some shift has taken place because we have been judging people through their actions for so long that this is really like a breath of fresh air where, you know, we at least give a benefit of doubt to people around us that, okay, you know, their faith may be, their faith may be preserved and their faith is unaffected. And only their, we shouldn't judge them through their actions.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really, really, really very nice. But one question that I have is like, why do we think that only for devotees we need to do this? Why can't we be so broad-minded that we don't label people as devotee, non-devotee, and we do it for everyone?
We can. We can. Why not?
Because we anyways are not able to see anybody's faith. Like, you know, Vritrasur took birth in a demon form. And if anybody was judging him through his external appearance or his actions, then they wouldn't know that he had a lot of faith. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
So sometimes I agree. So sometimes we are so fooled by the external appearances and the external actions. And somehow we've been trained in such a way that, you know, four regulative principles, this, that, chanting. So our parameters are totally skewed, I would say. That now in the light of this discussion, now I'm a little confused. I'm a little confused that whom to call devotee and whom not to call.
I will say incomplete. Well, I would say it's not easy. It involves investment.
Right.
In a proper relationship, unless you get that person to reveal his or her heart in confidence, unless you earn that trust, you will never get to know. And the only thing that we can do is to judge that person. So so who that person is, we have to, unless we earn that person's trust and get that person to reveal his or her heart. It's very difficult to say whether their actions are born out of their faith or their conditioning. We will never know.
Right. Yes. So we shouldn't even try.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I can hear you now, Mati.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yes. So I think we, that this discussion proves one point, that at least we should not judge others. And for judging ourselves also, we will be a little relaxed. You know, we won't be judging ourselves also too harshly. So thank you so much for these two, what I would say, the piece of wisdom, you know, which is really amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna. This wisdom is directly from Bhagavad. Anyway, so anything else before we move ahead? Okay. Actually, my voice was either my internet connection was poor or Vahini Mataji's was poor, because there was a significant time lag between what I spoke and she could hear. Are you able to hear my voice clearly, or is it breaking? Can someone just let me know? You can type in your chat box and tell me if you are able to hear my voice clearly. Or is it breaking? Clear. Okay. Okay. Fine. So if there are no further discussion points or questions, then we will move ahead. Now I want to quote this verse from Bhagavad Gita, which actually is, in this verse, this distinction between the Shraddha and Swabhava is brought out in such a stark manner. Krishna brings this out. I am going to read the verse, the translation, and the commentary. Please hear attentively. Okay. Please hear attentively. Apichet suduracharo bhajate mam ananya bhava. Sadur eva samantavyah. Samyak vyavasito hi saha. So he says, apichet, even if, Krishna tells in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, even if suduracharo, even if one may be the most sinful person, so point to be noted here, bhajate mam, worships me, which means it is possible to worship Krishna while having a sinful nature, right? Ananya bhak, with no other desire than to please Krishna. Now this is interesting. He worships Krishna, that is all right, but he has no other desire other than the desire to please Krishna. Then why is he sinful? This is the question. So every sinner is not a willful sinner. People are circumstantial. They may be victims of their own conditionings. Because here it is mentioned that he has no other desire other than the desire to please me. And they must definitely know that sinful activities do not please Krishna. Then why they are acting sinfully? Right? Do you think every drinker, every habitual drinker, he actually thinks it is very good for him to drink? Not necessarily, right? But they are habituated, they are addicted, and they are not able to overcome their addictions, right? So here, Krishna, I mean, in the same sentence, what to speak of a full stop? There is not even a comma here. He says, even the most sinful person worships me with no other desire other than to please me. Well, how can they coexist, you may think? Krishna says, I consider that person to be my devotee. Sadureva samantavya. Why? He says, samyak vyavasito hi saha. Because he has fixed himself completely in me. Then the question is, if he has fixed himself completely in you, O Krishna, why is he sinful? Are you talking about his past sinful activity or current? Krishna says, I am not telling erstwhile sinful person. I am talking about the most sinful person, means in present tense. So now, here, Srila Vishnu Jagadakur and Prabhupada write very beautiful purports to this verse. I will read the purport here carefully. Krishna says, Srila Vishnu Jagadakur says, now, what is this Durachari? Srila Vishnu Chakradakur defines. If someone with bad conduct means Durachar. Hey Krishna, can you hear my voice? I'm sorry, I got disconnected. Can you hear my voice? Am I audible? Am I audible? Okay, better now. Fine. Okay, so let's continue. So we were discussing Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's explanation of this Abhicheda Sudurachara verse, where Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, if someone with bad conduct, Sudurachara, what is bad conduct? He says, addicted to violence, addicted to thievery, addicted to adultery. So now, sometimes violence, sometimes addiction is okay, sometimes thievery is okay. Matlab, if someone is addicted to violence, thievery and adultery, he is a Sudurachara. Now, he says, he worships me. Worships no one except me. Does not follow any other process like karma or jnana. And has no other desire than my desire. He is my devotee. How can someone have no other desire other than Krishna's desire, but still be addicted to violence, addicted to thievery, addicted to adultery? Is it possible? This is the question. I'll give you an example. Some of you have attended my other sessions. You might have heard this example. This is a story which happened in Sri Sri Radha Gopinath temple. Many years back, there was a devotee. He was not a devotee, I'm sorry. Many years back, there was actually a devotee who while traveling somewhere, he met a person who was a chain smoker. Okay. He was a chain smoker. Literally, chain smoker means what he would do. He would light the next cigarette with the previous cigarette, which means before the previous cigarette burns off completely, which means with a single matchstick, he would practically smoke the whole day. non-stop. The first matchstick that he lights during the day is the only thing he lights. And the rest of the day, before the previous cigarette gets over, he would light the next cigarette with that same cigarette. So, yugayitam nimeshena chakshusha pravrishayitam. Every moment, shunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahenami. Cigarette virahenami. Shunyayitam jagat sarvam for him. It was like that. Literally, that kind of a chain smoker. Somehow, he came in touch with this devotee and he somehow inspired by in Krishna consciousness and he started coming to Radha Gopinath after some time. And he got so inspired, he started attending morning program. So what he would do while attending morning program, that after he would come for Samsara Dhava and after Yasya Prasadat Bhagavad Prasadam, he will immediately run out. And after 5 minutes, he will manifest again. He would go out to smoke a cigarette, wash his hands and mouth. Then before Narsingh Arati started, he would come. Then after Narsingh Arati and Tulsi Puja, after Yanikani Chapapani, after offering water to Tulsi, he'll be gone. And after Shikshashtakam, he'll be there. You know. Then again after 2 rounds or 3 rounds, be gone. Then after that, he'll be back. This happened for many days. And people were observing him. Someone got suspicious. Where does he go? After every 10-15 minutes, where does he go? So one day, this devotee followed him. Okay. So he went somewhere to a dark, he went outside the gate and went to a dark corner. And he thought, what is he doing in the dark corner? He said, then he saw that he took a cigarette pack from his hand, from his pocket. He put it in his mouth and lit that cigarette and he was smoking. He thought, you rascal. All the while we thought you are a sincere devotee. Abhi ye cheating kar raha hai tu. Abhi dekho, I will catch you red handed. So this devotee slowly went and uska collar pakad liya. He caught hold of his collar. And then the person turned. And he saw he had a cigarette in his mouth and tears were flowing from his eyes. And as soon as he saw the devotee, the cigarette fell down and he started crying. And Prabhuji, please, mujhe, you know, please don't stop me from coming to this temple. You know, for the first time in my life, I am getting some hope that I can overcome my vices and somehow progress in spiritual life. Me to chain smoker tha, literally chain smoking. I was a smoker. But abhi, because of my practice of Krishna consciousness, you know, slowly, slowly come ho raha hai. Abhi, you know, once every 15-20 minutes I smoke a cigarette, but previously it was not like. So please don't stop me from coming to temple. So if somehow or other you allow me to come, then only me where I aadat chhut jayega, I have full confidence. Please give me some time. With tears in his eyes, he was begging that devotee. And the devotee was shocked. He said, this person is a chain smoker, but his faith process is much more than my faith, he felt. He has much more faith in Krishna consciousness than me. He has so much taste for Krishna consciousness than me. And this was like a big slap to his ego, actually. And then within a few months, actually the devotee completely gave up smoking. And within a few years, he got initiated. And because of him, his whole family became devotees. And now he is preaching to everyone. He got initiated and he's preaching to everyone. You know, that is the story. This is a story which happened in Radhagopinathyam. So here is the example of a person who is so durachari, but at the same time he had no other desire other than Krishna's desire, but helplessly he was indulging in these unfavorable activities. But then someone asks Krishna, but considering his bad conduct, how is he a devotee? Just like this devotee felt, you rascal, we thought that you are a devotee, but what you are doing now? Similarly, someone may ask Krishna, hey Krishna, are uska cut to dekho, violence, thievery, adultery, isko devotee bol raha, you know, how can you call him a devotee? So Krishna says, he is to be respected as a devotee because of his devotee qualities. It is a command. Not doing so is offense. My order is the authority. He says, he's got devotee quality, dekho. He's worshipping me. He loves me. So therefore he is a devotee. That's what Krishna says. That's what I see. Then this Purva Paksha argument. Purva Paksha person says, look, okay, I understand your point, Krishna. So he should be considered a devotee in that portion where he worships you. And he should be considered a non-devotee in that portion where he commits adultery. Correct? Wo devotee, temple hall mein samsar dhava gaata tha, tab devotee hai. Jab bahar ja ke cigarette phook raha tha, tab non-devotee hai. Aisa hi hai na? Ye devotee hai, ye non-devotee hai. Correct? Is that what you mean? So Krishna says, no. He should be considered as a devotee in all his parts. All his parts means whether when he is chanting the holy name or when he is smoking the cigarette. Right? You should not see his bad qualities at all. Why? He is completely convinced. Samyak vyavasthitaha. Samyak vyavasthitaha. He makes a splendid resolution. What is his resolution? I will go to hell for my sinful actions, which are hard to give up. But I will not give up dedicated worship. He says, let me go to hell for my sinful actions. I'm finding it very difficult to give up. But I will not give up my dedicated worship of Krishna. This is what the devotee says. So this is Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's explanation of this verse. Right? Srila Prabhupada says, the word sudurachara used in this verse is very significant and we should understand properly. Now hear what Prabhupada says here. Carefully. When a living entity is conditioned, he has two kinds of activities. One conditional and the other is constitutional. Does it sound familiar? Does it sound familiar? I want at least one of you to share your thoughts. Does it sound familiar? What do you think? Prabhupada says, when a living entity is conditioned, he has two kinds of activities. One is conditional and the other is constitutional. What is conditional activity? What is constitutional activity? Can you share your thoughts? Based on whatever we have discussed, if you are able to see the connection, can you share your thoughts? You can raise your hands if you would like to share. I will unmute you. Anyone? Okay. Okay, Vahini Mataji is this. Yes, Vahini Mataji.
Yes, Prabhuji, the same thing that we discussed, Swabhav and...
We are not able to hear you. I see that you're speaking, but I'm not. It's not audible.
Maybe my internet connection is not that good, maybe.
Is she audible to others?
Hari Bol?
Okay, others are able to hear her, but I am not able to hear her. Okay. Okay, she is audible. Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe my internet is poor today. But anyway, at least what is speaking is articulate. Okay, someone, Shyamalal Rupa says, based on Swabhava and Anatta. Yeah, constitutional value system. Yeah. Constitutional is value system and conditional is running due to the modes. And constitutional is devotional service. Perfect, right? Let's see what Prabhupada says. As for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, certainly there are different activities even for the devotees in connection with the conditional life, and such activities are called conditional. Besides these, the living entity who is fully conscious of his spiritual nature and is engaged in Krishna consciousness or the devotional service of the Lord has activities which are called transcendental. Such activities are performed in his constitutional position and they are technically called devotional service. So constitutional activity is that which is driven by one's value system, which is devotional service. And conditional activity is that which is driven by condition. Now, in the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and the conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another. But then again, sometimes these activities become opposed to one another. Does it sound familiar? Did we discuss this point? What do you think? Did we discuss this point? Sometimes the conditional nature parallels the constitutional nature. Sometimes the conditional nature opposes the constitutional nature. We did discuss this, right? We discussed the tug of war. It's sometimes, you know, how many of you can raise your hands, how many of you were early risers even before coming to Krishna consciousness? You can raise your hands. Vahini Mataji is raising her hands. Okay, at least one. How many of you can put your hands down? How many of you were late risers before coming to Krishna consciousness? So Vahini Mataji is an example of her conditional nature paralleling the constitutional nature. The constitutional requirement of devotional service is that you wake up early and utilize the Brahma Muhurta time for spiritual activities. But sometimes the conditional nature may be anti-parallel to constitutional nature, right? So he says, as far as possible, Prabhupada says, a devotee is very cautious so that he does not do anything that could disrupt his wholesome condition. So as far as possible, one should not put oneself in a situation where the unfavorable conditioning will be triggered. And we will act opposed to the, our constitutional nature. He knows that perfection in his activities depends on his progressive realization of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, however, it may be seen that a person in Krishna consciousness commits some act which may be taken as most abominable socially or politically. But such a temporary fall down does not disqualify him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that if a person falls down but is wholeheartedly engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord being situated within his heart purifies him and excuses him from the abomination. This is from the 11th canto. Svapadamulam bhajata priyasya tektanya bhavasya hari pareshaha vikarma yachot patitam kadanchit dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishta. This is what Krishna says. So, if someone is wholeheartedly serving Krishna, but he may be a victim of his conditioning, then Krishna says, I will take care, don't worry. The material contamination is so strong that even a yogi fully engaged in the service of the Lord sometimes becomes ensnared. But Krishna consciousness is so strong that such an occasional fall down is at once rectified. Therefore, the process of devotional service is always a success. Like that, of course, you know, there are other things also that Prabhupada writes. And then Krishna says, क्षिप्रम भवति धर्मात्मा शश्वत शांतिम निगच्छति कौन्तेय प्रतिजानी ही नमे भक्त प्रणश्यति. सो ही सेज क्षिप्रम भवति धर्मात्मा वेरी क्विकली सच अ पर्सन बिकम्स अ राइटियस पर्सन ही बिकम्स अ धर्मात्मा. इवन दो देर मे बी ट्रेसेस ऑफ अनराइटियस बिहेवियर अधर्मिक बिहेवियर इन हिम इन दैट डिवोटी but by his practice of bhakti very quickly he becomes a dharmaatma. Kshipram means very quickly. Shashvat shantim nigacchati and becomes completely devoid of contamination. O Kaunteya, O Arjuna, pratijanihi, you go and learn loudly, name bhaktah pranashyati, that my devotee shall never perish, Krishna says, right? And this also has a beautiful purport by Srila Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur here. We will read this purport. So here Srila Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur says, how can you accept the worship of such a simple person? So the Purva Paksha argument. Someone is questioning Krishna. Oh Krishna, how can you accept the worship of such a sinful person? How can you? How can you eat the food and drink that is offered by a heart that is contaminated with lust, anger? Will you accept? Krishna says, will you accept? How can you accept? That is what the opposing person is asking. Will you accept? Krishna says, yes, I will accept. Krishna says, very quickly he becomes right. He says, I will become the guarantor for that person. I give my guarantee. The present is used and not the future to express the fact that having committed by remembering the Lord, he becomes repentant and thus very quickly becomes righteous. He says, Shipram Bhavati. Bhavati is present tense. It's not future tense. He does not say in future. Of course, this will happen in future only. But then he says present tense because the cause and effect is going to be very fast. The cause is practice of bhakti. The effect is he will become a dharmatma. And because this will happen so fast, therefore he uses present tense. Shipram Bhavati, even though it must be Bhavanti in future. So, as soon as he thinks about Krishna and then he becomes repentant, very quickly he becomes righteous. Oh, how unfortunate I am. There is no one as low as I bringing bad name to the devotees, like that he repents. Repeatedly, he feels complete disgust for those actions. He's not happy engaging in those actions. Or the use of present tense can indicate that in the future he will develop righteousness fully, but even right now it exists in a subtle form. Now, this I really want at least some of you to answer, attempt to answer this question. Based on what we have been discussing the last few weeks, I want you to read this sentence again. And I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to at least attempt answering this question. I will read the sentence again. Or the use of the present tense can indicate that in the future, he will develop righteousness fully. But even right now, it exists in a subtle form. What is this righteousness that is existing right now in the subtle form? What is Krishna, what is Srila Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur talking about here? What is this righteousness in subtle form? Can someone answer this question? Yes, someone has answered it in the chat box. It is value system. He knows that it is wrong, but he is unable to refrain from it because of his condition. This is actually righteousness in the subtle form, right? He gives an example. after taking medicine, even though the destructive effects of fever or poison remains for some time, it is not considered seriously. Like if I go to Shyamlal Prabhu and I say, Prabhu, bahut garam lag raha hai, feverish lag raha hai. So he puts the thermometer in my mouth and he checks, are 102 hai. So what should I do? So incidentally, he happens to have a paracetamol with him. And he said, immediately take this. He gives me a paracetamol and gives me a glass of water. I put the paracetamol in my mouth and drink that glass of water. And I said, Prabhu, put the thermometer in my mouth. And he puts it. And he says, kitna hai? 102. Are aapne bola ki paracetamol kahunga to mera fever utar jayega, abhi bhi 102 hi hai. Yes, so the point is, but the patient may be very annoyed or anxious. How is it that even after eating the medicine, I am still showing the same temperature? But Shyamlal Prabhu will not be annoyed or anxious because he knows that it takes some time for the medicine to go and, spread in the blood or whatever and reduce the effects of the fever. So similarly, the same example he says, after taking medicine, even though the destructive effects of fever or poison remains for some time, it is not considered serious. Now, Prabhupada gives the example, two examples Prabhupada gives. One is when you switch off the fan, right? When you switch off the fan will still be running for a while. So, but that does not mean that it is still running. It is running due to its inertia and not due to electricity. Right? Similarly, when someone is performing an activity, after someone becomes a devotee, he may perform that activity out of his conditioning and not due to his conviction. Right? Just like there is a difference between fan running due to inertia of motion and fan running due to electricity. These are two different things. So therefore, in trying to understand devotees, I will not use the word judge because we should not judge. In trying to understand a devotee, Prabhupada says, look at the switchboard, don't look at the fan. Don't look at the fan because looking at the fan can be misleading. It may still be running. So look at the switchboard. If the switch is off, don't worry, even if the fan is moving. Right? That's what he says. Which means, if the devotee is practicing Krishna consciousness, even if he may have some not so pleasant conditionings, don't take it very seriously. By the power of devotional service, it will be washed away. That is the confidence that Krishna is giving here. So he says, thus, this is one example Prabhupada gives, the example of fan and switch. Another example Prabhupada says in a very powerful way, he says, don't criticize a dirty person who is standing under the shower. Prabhupada says this. Don't criticize a dirty person who is standing under the shower. Which means it is just a question of time before he will become clean again. You are criticizing because he is dirty right now. But why don't you see that he is standing under the shower and the water of that shower is capable of cleansing him? So, just like we would not criticize a dirty person standing under the shower, similarly, we should not criticize a devotee who may be a victim of his conditioning right now. But by the strength of his practice of devotional service, he will very soon overcome those conditions. Right? So, here Srila Vishwanatha Thakur says, thus, with the entrance of bhakti in his mind, the sinful actions are not taken seriously. And the traces of sin such as lust and anger should be considered insignificant like the biting of a toothless snake. Thus, he attains complete cessation of lust and anger permanently. In Nigacchati, Ni stands for Nitaram, completely. This means that even during the stage of having the tendency to commit sin, he has a pure heart. Would someone like to comment on this last line? This means that even during the stage of having the tendency to commit sin, he has a pure heart. Can someone comment on this sentence? You can please raise your hands, I will unmute you. What does it mean? Anyone would like to comment? Based on whatever we have discussed, if you can see a connection here, can you please comment on this? What does it mean when here Srila Vishnu says, this means that even during the stage of having the tendency to commit sin, he has a pure heart. What does it mean? Anyone? Okay, there is one answer in the chat box here. It means the person is coming out and aligning more with the value system. Although there might be some condition, he may be already aligned with the perfectly aligned with the value system, but still the influence of the conditioning is there. That's what it means. Okay, so the faith is clear, the faith is pure, even though the conditioning may be severe. That is the point. Okay, so anyway, before we move forward, till now we have seen some examples from Bhagavad Gita to see, you know, this this contrast between the Shraddha and Swabhava. Before we move forward, we will see some examples from Bhagavatam. But before we get there, any quick comments, questions, discussion points, anything anyone would like to share as add? You can please raise your hands. I will unmute you. Anyone would like to ask any questions or share your thoughts and comments on this topic? Very critical topic. Okay, if there is none, then we will continue. We still have about 5 minutes time. Okay, there is a question in the chat box. Are we going to discuss how to adopt and act on our value system? Well, we are already doing it, right? You know, the very fact that we have come together and for the last 1.5 hours sitting and discussing a subject matter which has no sensual value. You know, practically there is not a single even photograph in this whole PowerPoint. It is all exactly in black and white, and the only variety that is there in this whole PowerPoint is the topics are in bold and red color. Otherwise, it's all black and white and only words, 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 nothing else. But still, the very fact that we are here sitting and discussing for the last 1.5 hours, with practically none of you have dropped out. It was 18 at some point and it's now 17. So which means more than 95% of the devotees are still staying in and discussing this subject matter, where there is absolutely no sensual material that is being presented. That in itself shows that we are actually acting according to our value system here, isn't it? So we can do it better when we have the right association. We can do it better when we have the right guidance, when we read the books and understand what is expected of us from Krishna, from Guru, from the Guru Shishya Parampara. And then slowly, in the association of devotees by practice, if our faith becomes stronger and stronger, then we will be able to more and more act fully in alignment with the value system. That would be possible. Right? Any other discussion points or questions before we move on to the Bhagavatam part of it? Till now we have discussed only some proofs from Bhagavad Gita. But if there are no further questions, I will not move on to Bhagavatam right now because you know, it will take some time. But we will continue this discussion. And please don't feel that in the name of Bhagavad Gita I am discussing, you know, what is the connection between the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita and the topic that we are discussing. Please don't think like that. This is a very critical understanding of our own practice. When we slowly go towards the end of this presentation, you will get an understanding, because it's very important that we understand what we are practicing. What is it that we are practicing? So otherwise, you know, people can tell so many things about what we should be practicing and why we should be practicing. Unless our understanding is rooted in the teachings of our Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, we can very easily get swayed into practicing many things which we are not supposed to practice. And we may be convinced about giving up certain practices which we are absolutely supposed to practice. So this is very important. And it is very much connected to the verse that we are discussing right now. And even though, you know, for the last 3-4 sessions, we have been discussing an answer to one question that Vahini Mataji asked. But it's a very critical question asked at a very critical juncture of our discussion. So therefore, it is relevant. So please do not feel that we have been in verse number 2.45 for the last 4 weeks. Please don't think like that. We will definitely move ahead. But I think this discussion is critical. That's why I'm spending some time to discuss this topic. Thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. Hoping to have your association next week also. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna, thank you very much.